And welcome back to the second hour of We the People Radio on May the 17th, 2026. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Okay, we are here with Drew Allen. His whole name is Drew Thomas Allen, just in case he's in trouble with you. You can use his whole name then. He has written a book called Clinton Hoax, Obama Coup, The Declassified Story of the Trump-Russia Delusion. He also is the author of America's Last Stand and another book, For Christ and Country, The Martyrdom of Charlie Kirk. He does a podcast under his own name, so that's pretty fun. He's an in-demand political analyst in radio, on radio and TV. Super fun. And we're having a really good time with this, Drew. And sorry we had to cut you off midstream. Again, back to live radio. Podcast, you can just kind of go, right? Don't you get to go as long as you want?
Yeah, you just kind of go. I mean, they're different mediums, but I like the style, and I like, you know, radio, TV, podcast. You know, you have to develop different muscles in terms of communication.
TV's the worst.
I hate TV.
Yeah, TV's got the end, and it's
4 minutes. No, 4 minutes. Make your case. 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, see, and that's when we started this like 15 years ago. Everything on radio, you were hearing people for like a minute and a half, 2 minutes. I'm like, well, what the heck? I didn't learn anything. I learned nothing.
Yeah.
So we decided, we were long before Joe Rogan, we decided, you know what? It'd be better to bring the same person on for the whole time and learn a bunch of stuff. And it's turned out to be a super good idea, and we've never gone back the other way. And we stopped taking call-ins like after we got one, because it's like, okay, this isn't fair to bring on somebody who actually knows what they're talking about to be harangued by someone who spent 5 seconds listening about listening and formulating a question. That just seemed wrong. So we've kind of maintained this format the whole time. We kind of like it.
It's a great format. It's rare.
Yeah, and that's what's kind of nice about it. We can take topics that require time, you know. It's funny, I was thinking on our way over, next week is Memorial Weekend, and that's always kind of hard to find people who have free time. Our go-to person for so long was Dr. Peter Vincent Pry on, you know, 4th of July weekend, Memorial Day weekend. He's like, oh, I would much rather do this than, you know, hang out and eat hot dogs with my family. He was really funny. Father's Day. He was a great patriot, and he had a ton of information. We were always, I'm working out of his playlist today. We always did all the Russian stuff with his shows. So we're channeling the great Dr. Pry today. So Drew, we cut you off mid-sentence.
Yes. We're talking about Barack Hussein Obama, Billy Graham of Islam, who covered up the jihadist attack at Fort Hood during his first year, during his first term as president.
Yeah.
And and that's why I say, you know, it's so important people remember these things in history, because Trump-Russia collusion didn't just happen. It couldn't have just happened. You know, the groundwork was laid long before, during Obama's first term, because what he was willing to do even during his first year, and that people in the FBI were willing to... And what you notice, too, when you go back that far, is you understand what the deep state is, because it's not this, you know, amorphous, hard-to-understand thing. It's actually concrete individuals. So, you know, Robert Mueller was there in the FBI as director, you know, under Obama. You know, Victoria Nuland, that name comes up a lot. I mean, all these people. But Obama was willing to lie about, you know, that jihadist attack. And he's just come into office. I mean, where do you get the cojones as a president for, like, 2 months to have your intelligence, you know, community lie and label it workplace violence?
That was one of those things that I think everybody thought would ultimately be walked back, and it never was.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. And, you know what it did, too, is it deprived the families of those who lost loved ones of payment. You know? It deprived them of actual, like, it hurt their livelihoods. They lost a loved one because of a jihadist attack, but they didn't get any of the kind of financial benefits that would have come from acknowledging the reality. And so he didn't care who he burned down, who died. You know, it was all to protect this ideology. And, you know, I really go into in the book, too, about his, you know, kind of Islamic, you know, background and who he was and why he did these things, because, you know, he always followed Obama's golden rule, and that was anytime there was an act of radical Islamist, you know, mass violence, jihadist attack in this country even, he would always have to then talk about how great Islam was as a religion. And he did not show that favoritism towards Christianity. As a matter of fact, he went to the National Prayer Breakfast, I think in 2015 was the year, it's in the book, and he actually lectured a room full of Christians about how, you know, Christianity wasn't so good either. He basically tried to, you know, create a false moral equivalence between Islam and Christianity. As if they're a bunch of bloodthirsty, you know, equivalent of jihadist groups in Christendom out there going and killing people, you know, that we have apostates, that there's the equivalent of a caliphate that's waiting to reign over, you know, all Christians throughout the world and bring, you know, I mean, it's just crazy, but he did that. I mean, and he got away with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, because everybody was sort of, stunned into silence, I guess, in a way it was...
Well, we were supposed to all be in awe with his ability to communicate, which I never saw it. He was also supposed to bring the races together. And
that worked out well.
You know, it got worse than it ever was under him, in my opinion. There were just a lot of things that Obama was supposed to fix, and he just made everything worse.
Deliver, right?
Yeah, no.
He was going to deliver it to us.
Oh, he delivered all right.
Yeah. I do.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a great point.
Yeah, I do think there were a lot of people who became really disillusioned after they saw what he was up to, but not enough. And oddly enough, just I guess it was yesterday, I was going through a bunch of replies. There were texts sent out regarding the election, and I couldn't. I should pull it up. I gotta find it before we get off the air. Somebody actually responded with a list of Russia stuff about Trump, and I'm like, I've had to respond, he's not on the ballot. He wasn't one of the endorsements we sent you. But still,
yeah.
There was a woman as recently as yesterday afternoon who was still just seething mad about Trump and his Russia connections. Like,
yeah.
I don't know how you fix that.
That's all they have. Well, you can't. Their brains are completely broken. I mean, look, there's, not that we'll get too deep into this, but, you know, I can personally trace the time frame of the radicalization of Democrats and leftists in this country from personal experience because, you know, I grew up in Dallas, Texas, but I went to an all-male Jesuit elitist college prep school for high school, and it was very left-leaning, you know, social justice, you know, that's the Jesuits thing, which is just, you know, Marxism. And all my friends and teachers were all Democrats, and I was not a closeted Republican conservative back then. I would say conservative but ideologically that's where I am. And then I went to college at Pepperdine in Malibu, but I was a theater major on an acting scholarship, so all my friends were Democrats. And then I moved to New York City after graduating as an actor.
Whoopsie.
All my friends were Democrats. And then a year into New York City, I moved to Milan, Italy, and I got a job working in fashion for Marc Jacobs. And I lived in Italy for 2 years, and that was not exactly a, you know, conservative environment either. And so the point is, I accrued many, many Democrat friends over the course of my life, and I was never convinced, obviously, to convert to stupidity, but I still had those friends. And, you know, 2016, I supported Trump, and then 2020, I supported Trump as well. 2016, the friendships weren't broken, right? So 2016, they were still able to be friends with me, even though they didn't like that I supported Trump. But by 2020, after 4 years of this radicalization with Trump, Russia collusion, everything else, I don't have a single childhood friend left. I don't have a single college theater friend left. I don't have a single friend from my Marc Jacobs years left. Every single one of them, to varying degrees, either directly told me to F myself or, you know, or just walked away.
Or something else
and,
real subtle like
you know, that.
That
wasn't, yeah, you know, it's, and so it just tells you a lot about the mindset, the mentality of those people. And by the way, after Charlie Kirk was assassinated, people I went to high school with, people I know or have known, they were celebrating his murder. So it's like the Democrat Party, obviously not every Democrat is a horrible, evil person,
right.
But it's the same thing with Islam. You know, not every Muslim is a violent, horrible person, but the radicals are all coming from that group. So, and I think there's something to be learned from that comparison because, you know, 9/11, it was, you know, Pakistanis giving out candy and celebrating our pain in the streets overseas. You know, 9/10, Charlie Kirk, it was, you know, your professors and your neighbors that were celebrating right here in the good old U.S. of A. So it's pretty scary.
It is scary, and we've done a whole bunch of shows on Islam. A lot. Enough that they're under their own tab on the website. But the most interesting thing we discovered through that journey was a book. The name of the book is It's All About Muhammad. And the guy wrote under a pen name, Frank Burley. But It's All About Muhammad is a biography of Muhammad. Very, very compelling. Easy read. Kind of long, but just a real page-turner. And so many things people don't know about the underpinnings of that whole thing. They think it's like, I mean, actually, when you read the book, it's like reading about Jesus in reverse.
Yeah.
And I don't think people understand that. The Quran is twisted and turny, and, you know, then you wind up not understanding it and having to kind of take people's word for it. But, hey, read about the guy that started it all.
Yeah.
Yes. It's not a secret. And, you know, look, I mean, it's like you shouldn't be, you can be respectful, but as a Christian, like, you're not a very good Christian if you think that all religions are equal. You know, one is true and the others are not, right? And Islam is as false religion as it gets. And, you know, it's amazing because I love the apologetics and stuff, too. And I spend a lot of my time studying and researching, you know, the Gospels and the history of Christianity and everything else. And then I've also recently been reading about Islam, too. And, you know, it's amazing that these guys, you know, now they're Muslims, but, you know, they had to graft themselves onto our history. You know, they couldn't even invent their own thing. You know, they had to come in and, you know, try and appropriate aspects of Christianity. And, you know, it's just amazing to use that as the that's what's amazing about, I mean, Christianity, the more you scrutinize it, actually, the more convincing it becomes that it's the one true, real faith.
It is kind of amazing. And you know, it's like, go do whatever you want. It's a little bit like this guy that, is Jared Huffman your congressman over where you are? Okay. Yeah,
I've got Mike Thompson.
Okay. Well, pretty much everybody is better than Jared Huffman, but he's coming for us because they have, through their massive Prop 50 gerrymandering, they've taken over MoDoc, Shasta, and Siskiyou counties and slurped us in with the coast. But Jared Huffman, I mean, his quote just from him, super proud of it, too. I am the only member of Congress willing to admit there is no God and there is no afterlife. So I guess if words mean anything, that means the rest of us are all lying and we're just too chicken to admit it. And yet there will be we're in a Democrat plus 25 district here. And people will vote for him because he has a D behind his name. It's like, okay. Well, besides the fact his policies are all absolutely 100% against everything we think. I mean, he isn't a nice atheist, right? Like, I'm an atheist and you're a Christian, so you go do you. He's not one of those.
No, he's always on the attack.
Yeah. I mean, he was after Sean Duffy about the portrait of Jesus walking on the water for the Maritime Academy. How dare you put that back up there? We took it down. You know, you're forcing religion on people. So yeah. I don't know. It's kind of weird, you know. Those of us, I was raised Catholic. I went to Catholic school in Connecticut, and you know, we didn't care if other people weren't Catholic. Like, okay, I don't know. Nobody really minded, and that seems to not be okay anymore.
Well, no, there's an effort to, you know, part of the reason we're in this problem is because, you know, Christians have been overly merciful, you know? Mm-hmm. We've been overly open in approving of things that are totally against, you know, our foundation of this country and everything else, you know? And they have, you know, beaten us with a stick about it, you know?
Yeah.
They've invented lies like separation of church and state, which is not a real thing. It comes from, you know, Jefferson's letter to the Danbury Baptists. And the irony of that letter, of course, is that it's not about, you know, keeping Christians out of elected office. It's about keeping the government, you know, from interfering in you know, your ability to practice, because Baptists were a minority, you know, congregation and group and denomination at the time. But you know, I would look at somebody like James Tallarico, who's trying to run for Senate in Texas. I mean, you see Democrats all the time that try and use their false Christianity to push their agenda, whether it's abortion or transgenderism or gender theory. They have no problem trying to cite scripture and bastardizing it. So separation of church and state, I mean, it's just more of this kind of Marxist ploy where, you know, the rules don't apply to them. It's Saul Alinsky's rules for radicals, right? Where, you know, you make the enemy live up to their own rules. But in so many cases, the left invents the rules that they then hold us to. They're not even real rules. We don't need to be held to those rules.
Right.
But they invent them and stick them to us, and they say, hey, you know, you guys, separation of church and state, all right? We can put the transgender stuff in the room, but the Ten Commandments? No, we can't do that. You know, that stuff's bad. It's just the basis of Western civilization.
Well, and the mind blowing part, it's funny because it's all part and parcel of your book, that the moving of the goalposts. So we have to take a really quick break, but we're going to come back with our guest, Drew Thomas Allen. He's the author of Clinton Hoax, Obama Coup, the Declassified Story of the Trump-Russia Delusion. And then we're going to talk about some other stuff, too, as you've noticed. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions had an echo in so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out.
So much of that going on. So we've got plus or minus 20 some minutes. What haven't we covered, Drew?
Well, we haven't solved world peace or world hunger yet.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
No.
Who haven't we maligned? Let's stick with things we do well.
Yeah.
Who have we forgotten to rope in and hang in this segment?
Well, we haven't done Newsom the favor yet.
Gosh, yeah.
We could bash him for a while. I'm really good at that. Actually, I've devoted my career at the Daily Signal to ruining his future.
Nice.
But it's not very hard. I don't have to do much except just
tell people,
you know,
what he did.
So just let him gesticulate like he's conducting an orchestra of dummies. You know, I mean, this is one of the weirdest guys I've ever seen in my life. I mean, he's like, you know, here's my thing on Newsom. He thinks he's Barack Obama, but he's actually Hillary Clinton without a skirt.
Are you sure?
He is like an he's like an evangelist who doesn't believe in God.
Yes, that too. But, you know, I think that Newsom's biggest problem actually is not going to be his record. It's that his wife is more insane than he is. And she's like less likable than he is. So Jennifer Siebel Newsom is the one who's going to actually prevent him from having any shot at the White House.
But he's not really sleeping with her, isn't he sleeping with someone else? Is he going to get a pass because he's actually not sleeping with her?
Well, yeah.
There's that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Him and Barack Obama would probably spend the night together. Maybe Siebel and Big Mike are sleeping together. Who knows?
You heard it here first. So follow that. So what's the deal with her?
Which one, Big Mike or Siebel?
Siebel. Or, well, you know.
Yeah.
That's a different show.
Saying, I don't actually believe that she is blah, 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 but whatever. I love making fun of her because she's such an awful person, too. But, Siebel Newsom's just like, I actually was on someone's podcast a few weeks ago, or maybe a month ago now, and she went to high school with Jennifer Newsom. She was, like, in her class or something. And she said, you know, it was like what you'd expect, you know, she just kind of fake back then, but pretty, wanted to be a Hollywood actress and that sort of thing. So they're not surprised that she's with Newsom and all that at all. But, you know, Siebel Newsom, I mean, she's out there, and every time she goes on a podcast, it's just more footage to play to show how radical and unrelatable the Newsoms are to the rest of the country. Because, you know, you can sell that crap in California in Shasta County or,
Doesn't really work so good here. Might work where... Does it work where you are? But we all think it does. Does Napa fall for all that?
Yeah, I mean, Napa's still red, but it's not, you know, plus 25, 26, 27. And it's kind of interesting to meet somebody who doesn't work in wine, who lives up here, who, like, you know, my kids go to school, right? It's like you hang out with parents, and you're going around the table when you first meet, and everybody, you know, all anyone wants to talk about is, like, you know, how are you so rich? Or, like, what do you do? You know, who's richer? And so, you know, like, what do you do? Oh, well, you know, my daddy and mommy, they own this amazing winery. Oh, my daddy and mommy own this piece of land. And then, oh, my daddy and mommy, you know, and me, we own this restaurant, whatever else. So, okay, cool. Drew, what do you do? Well, I'm a publicist for people like Tulsi Gabbard and Ben Carson and Charlie Kirk. And I'm a columnist at the Daily Signal. It's like, there's no hiding, you know what I mean? My political.
Right.
It is who I am, so everyone knows. And everyone knows. And I love it. I don't care. But what it does is all these people who are afraid, some of them are very rich, very successful, own wineries, own whatever, they all come to me. And so I'm like this magnet for, you know, the silent ranks of people who, you know, wish they could, I think, really deep down do what I'm doing. But anyway, yeah, no, it's still blew up here. But, you know, Siebel Newsom, I mean, she's just, like, the Newsoms are exactly what they attack Trump of 24/7, which is so amazing. Like, he attacks Trump about the reflecting pool that he's fixing right now, or building the ballroom with private money. You know, this guy can't build it. And this guy has presided over the worst aspect of the train to nowhere. You know, $14 billion spent already, $15 billion spent, projected to be $237 billion now with a B. And this guy's attacking Trump. This guy can't build anything. We have the worst streets and roads in the country. We have the highest gas taxes. You know, Jennifer Newsom's out there bragging on one podcast about how, you know, like, she took her kids on a tour of the South. You know, like, they went to look at the zoo of all the weirdo rednecks and Republicans, you know. Yeah, I took them on a tour, and we went and looked to show them what they shouldn't become. You know, it's like, what a, like, demonic person. You think that's going to play with half the country when you run for election? All you got to do is play clips of Jennifer Siebel Newsom, and he can't win. It doesn't even have to be about him. And, you know, typically the first lady, a good one, you know, they have the ability to kind of cover up for or kind of counteract some of the flaws of, you know, candidates. And every male, like, even the best people, even Reagan, you know, wasn't perfect. But, you know, you have a wife out there, a first lady, who can kind of soften some of that, who has some kind of superpower of her own that you don't possess. Because we're not all perfect and good at every single thing. And so you have these first ladies historically who really boost, you know, the president. And she brings them down, you know.
That's a really good point because, you know, we say that quite a bit, that there's no perfect candidate. I mean, they all have flaws. You've got to look at what you're running against and look at, you know, what they represent and what they're going to do if they get elected.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's no perfect candidate.
No. And you know, people can isolate, like with Trump, it's like, oh, he had affairs in the past or whatever else. It's like, yeah, you know, there comes a time where I don't care about someone's personal life or, you know, their past failures, because at the end of the day, you know, I'd rather you have affairs but not be a communist trying to destroy the country. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't care if you live the perfect life, you know, with your wife or husband or spouse or whatever else, and you drink tea together every night at 6:30 and you never missed one in 46 years. Like, I don't care if you do that, but your policies are, let's destroy the country. You know what I mean? Like, okay, I'll take the guy that has the affairs, all right? Because he's not ruining my life.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, it's, you know, you look at the things that they've done, and as long as they can hide this gas thing, I don't think that'll go past the election. But at this point, you know, people are kind of buying it because they're denying that this is a problem, and it's right there.
Yeah, I was forced to painfully watch every single one of these gubernatorial debates to cover them for the Daily Signal. And no one should have to endure that, but I did. And maybe y'all did too. Some of us have to for work. But it was just astonishing, debate after debate after debate, to watch like how bad these Democratic candidates are. That they can't own anything, and that it is Trump, Trump, Trump. And, you know, I mean, either Republican candidate, Chad Bianco or Steve Hilton, are 1,000 times better than even Matt Mahan, who they want to pretend is, you know, some sort of moderate version of communism. But it was just, every debate was just like the same thing. And to look at this crowded, this field of Becerra, who is so crooked and so corrupt, yeah, who's failed in every single position he's ever had.
Yeah.
Like, this guy is potentially their leading, you know, candidate right now. Or you look at Katie Porterhouse. I mean, Porter, sorry. Freudian slip.
Katie Mashed Potato. Yeah,
Katie Mashed Potatoes, who dumped the scalding hot mashed potatoes on her ex's head, you know, the whiteboard warrior, screaming at, you know, her staff and berating them.
I'm just sad Swalwell dropped out. I was sad when Swalwell left. That was a bummer. It was good entertainment.
I was sitting in some taco shop, though, before all this stuff came out. And I was just like, my wife was like clenching my arm, like, Drew, don't do it. Don't say anything. Don't get involved in this. Because a group of, you know, Napa elite women and men, and they were having a conversation about how they, and they were, you know, oh, Swalwell's my favorite. He's so amazing. I'm going to vote for Swalwell. I just think he's the greatest guy ever. And my wife's just grabbing me like I'm on a leash. You know, I'm like, I'm
don't
about to
do
about
it.
To, you know,
she and Bill should be
banger. Yeah, they should. But I got that whole thing wrong with Swalwell, because I thought, you know, prevailing wisdom, and I was guilty of it, I thought that, you know, they took him out, you know, to save their chances before the primary, but they actually did it to prevent him from making it onto the ballot, because if this could come out, because the likelihood of Chad Bianco and Steve Hilton going forward are like zero. You know, it's going to be,
right,
hopefully we get one of them, and it looks like it's going to be Steve Hilton. That's always been, I think, what everyone understood was going to happen. So everyone knew, okay, Steve Hilton's probably going to make it. And let's hope he does, but he's probably going to make it. But the Democrats were looking at this thing, and they're like, oh my gosh. Like, Swalwell somehow is like the leading, like by far, the leading Democrat candidate. Like, we all know what he did. We know it's going to come out. It's better to blow him up now, so that you don't have them both on the ballot, and then we have the, you know, October surprise, and then we definitely elect Steve Hilton. You know, I think that's actually what happened.
Well, that makes perfect sense, too.
Yeah.
But what what doesn't make perfect sense is his behavior has been going on for years and years, and nobody knew about it.
How can you sleep with a Chinese spy? That goes public, and you're still in Congress. People still elect you.
Everybody knew about it.
That's, you know, I always say they're not electing each other, and they don't elect themselves. So who do we really need to blame? You know?
Yeah. Well, he's the tip of the iceberg. That's what's so astonishing about all this. And I got to say, I mean, I don't want to open up a can of worms with the audience and you guys. This isn't meant to be
We love worms. I don't have any songs about it, well, but we love worms.
Well, I think that Swalwell likes some worms, too. I think he's probably got a few after his sexual history. But
I was
anyway,
going to say, after we saw some of those videos, you...
Yeah, that was unreal. But I was going to say, what's crazy is, like, you have all these congressmen, even Republicans, who are demanding, you know, justice for the Epstein victims, and they want all the Epstein files, and, you know, they got them, you know, $3-6 million. There's been no justice, but that's a whole other conversation. I can explain why. Everyone was sold a pipe dream to begin with as it relates to the Epstein stuff. But anyway, all this stuff, I'm not saying it's right. There should be accountability, but it happened, you know, over a decade ago. You've got Swalwell, which proves that this same type of behavior, sexual misconduct, promiscuity, and worse, is happening with sitting members of Congress. And you don't see any of these people demanding for the Epstein files to demand, you know, access and transparency for the $17 million slush fund that we pay for to pay off all these NDAs and everything for sexual harassment, sexual assault, sexual whatever, claims to go away with sitting members of Congress. And you mean to tell me that, you know, Eric Swalwell's best friends in Congress had hung out with him, like that guy from Arizona who ditched his pregnant wife, served her divorce papers, Ruben Gallego. He didn't know about it? Of course he knew about it. They all knew about it. And that's the whole thing. But here's the other thing. It's okay in America to sleep with a Chinese spy and be compromised. Then you can be actually elevated and put on an intelligence committee. but you can't go and sleep with, you know, some hooker or something like that. But the spy thing's cool. We're cool with that.
Yeah, we're good with the spy thing. But the fake Russia deal, let's drag that forward. It's interesting. I've had a lot of people ask, you know, well, what's a really good definitive source for news and that sort of thing? And really, honestly, the biggest problem right now is there's so much information that it goes one of two ways. People wind up down the wrong rabbit hole and they believe a bunch of crap that isn't true. I just got an email. I should forward it to you just for fun reading, where they believe that Princess Diana didn't really die in the car crash. She was actually whisked away and then put through some sort of magical physical transformation, and she became Melania Trump, who... I sent you the email. You didn't read it yet? And I'm reading this thing. It's like, what? And then she was inserted into Donald Trump's life, so that's how the British have so much control. And I'm like, dear God. Like people actually.
Oh well, that's.
I mean,
that's
what
believable.
The heck?
I believe that. I thought you were gonna say she turned into Candace Owens, but it's just Melania Trump.
It's just Melania Trump.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I believe that.
Yeah. Totally. So you've got that stuff, and people wind up slurped down that hole, or then suddenly there's just this overwhelming thing, and then people go, I don't watch any of it. Like, they just completely unplug. But on that note, we have to take a really quick break so we can listen to the news. Alex had a brilliant idea. We found a song for Mrs. Newsom and Mr. Newsom. So, brought to you by We the People Radio.
.us.
The devil went down to Georgia. He was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind, and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too. And if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now, you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul because I think I'm better than you. Now, on the day I was born, the nurses all gathered round, and they gazed in wide wonder at the joy they had found.
Then nurse spoke up, said, leave this one alone. She could tell right away that I was bad to the bone. Bad to the bone. Bad to the bone. Bad. 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 Bad to the bone.
I guess I could go for either one of them, but there you go. Newsom, the musical. Back to you, Drew.
Bad to the bone.
No pressure.
Yeah. No, you know, it's funny. I think about all these candidates on the Democrat side running for governor. It's like, you think it couldn't get any worse. And then it's like, how is it that they can be so bad that they make Newsom look like, you know, desirable? You know, at least he's got good hair.
Actually, you know? Actually, the part that blows my mind is that it makes Jerry Brown look normal now. Jerry Brown looks like a complete moderate now.
You shouldn't have said that. That's really sad and depressing.
Isn't it?
That's really.
I know, yeah. Right? That's like slam your head in your own locker if we were still in high school, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Not good.
Well, and I think it's so outrageous, too, that, I mean, like, none of these scandals stick to anybody. Like, Newsom, I don't know if Californians even know this. I think many of them do, though. But Gavin Newsom is spending close to $19 million with our taxpayer money. He already spent it to hire a crisis PR firm to whitewash his record. We are paying for propaganda for his 2028 presidential run. And by the way, the crisis PR firm that he hired is the same one that Saudi Arabia hired. It's the biggest one in the world. The same one that Saudi Arabia hired after they killed Khashoggi, the journalist, to run ads like, Saudi Arabia's not that bad. We killed, you know, journalists, but come here, you're safe. Non-journalists will not. No harm will come to non-journalists. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
There
you go.
As long as
leave
you
your phones at home.
As long as you don't try to bring a pen into our country, you're fine. Oh.
Yeah. But that's who we hired. It's so outrageous, you know. And you know, we talk about these things and joke about them. We have to joke about them to survive because there's so much just like unbelievable stuff happening every day. We got to keep fighting and moving forward. I know this isn't related to Trump or to collusion, but I think we covered a lot of ground.
I think we left that a while ago.
Although I do encourage people. Yeah, we left it. But I mean, people need to read it. They need to understand it. But, I'm 39. I've got two kids. I'm married. I live in Napa Valley. And I'm tempted to leave the state all the time. Actually, I have my own time of the month. And my time of the month is I get my PGE bill, and it says $1,000 or $1,500.
Yeah.
And
is that crazy?
And I just think like this. I don't live in a mansion. I live in an expensive area anyone in California lives in expensive, but I live in an expensive area. I get that. But my electric use, it's such a scam. And, you know, one of the reasons it's gone up 30-40%, you know, year after year is because the state of California sued PGE and settled for $2 billion. Well, guess who pays the $2 billion? We do. So they just turn around and give it to us. Like, people are so, it's just, and I see people when I talk about these issues or when Daily Signal posts like a reel I do about it on Instagram or I write about it, and the Democrats like defend it. I'm like, you know, like the PGE bill is speaking. I tell anybody outside of California that, and their minds are like they have their own meltdown. Like they cannot believe it.
Yeah,
you know, and but people in California, they're Democrats, are just like, well, that's the price you pay to live here. It's so beautiful. I'm like, what does that have to do with like the weather?
Yeah,
you know, like you don't have to live like this. Is my point. But their argument's like, yeah, who cares that the government's the most corrupt in the world? Who cares that there's, you know, $500 billion worth of fraud? Who cares that we have the train to nowhere?
I was going to say, who cares that we haven't laid one inch of track for the high-cost rail? Yeah.
That's right.
But it's so beautiful here. You know, it's beautiful here.
Yeah, Connecticut was beautiful when I lived there. Washington was beautiful when I lived there. I mean, yeah, a lot of beautiful places.
Yeah.
It is. It's just frustrating.
I'm staying. I'm fighting. I decided to stay and fight, even though I could live somewhere else and just feel rich every single day, instead of like every day feeling like, oh man, okay, I got to keep some money rolling in because, you know, who knows if my bill is going to be $1,000 or $1,500 this month, you know?
Well, it's true.
Or the water, not to talk about water. I mean, it's like all of it's so insane, but it's all self-inflicted. And my point is, it's so crazy that so many people in the state, they just like, it's like detached. It's like they complain about it too, but then they don't. But they're like, they accept it. Like you like, we don't have to have $7 gas. We don't have to.
No.
Our electric bills don't have to be $1,500 a month. So why would you want them to be? Just because you're a Democrat? Are you stupid?
Well, we have enough. I mean, we've learned from the oil and gas guys that that the state of California was walled off as a fuel island because they had so much oil and they had so much capacity to produce and refine that we could be like Alaska and give dividends to our citizens or not have property tax or whatever you want to get rid of and replace it with energy because we have enough here to actually cover our own needs and export. Instead, they've cut back our refining capacity and started importing from people who hate us, who are gross polluters. And that's considered...
It's crazy. And it's dirtier.
And that's considered noble. It's like, oh dear.
Yeah.
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 At some point, those choices will have to be changed. You know, people will have to get an idea. I think the people in the Palisades are kind of a cautionary tale. You know, they saw how much fun we were having up here with our fires and the inability to rebuild and the onerous insanity of regulatory overreach.
Yeah, now it's on them.
Yeah. Like,
I moved to the Napa Valley in 2020. That's when we had the major fires. Well, y'all part of that too, I guess. You know, it was such a big fire. But I was sitting actually in a winery back then in 2020. Sitting in a winery closer to Calistoga, as north as you can go in the Napa Valley. And I was looking south back towards Napa. And I'm just watching the world burn while I'm like drinking a glass of wine. It was really surreal.
Yeah.
And we had to evacuate, and we evacuated to Napa, and then the ash was hitting Napa, and you know, and then you find out, of course, like it's self inflicted. Like, what do you think's going to happen when you just have like a bunch of kindle, you know, like kindling, like ready? You know, you can't remove trees, and you know, I read these stories about people who, you know, remove trees from their own lots for whatever reason. I don't care whether they do it for fire prevention or anything else. It's on their property, and they're getting fined like $1 million. This is down closer towards like Oakland or something like that. I just read the story about a family that's being fined like $1 million because they removed trees, and the city, you know, told them, you can't do that. These are the special trees, you know.
Yeah.
Well, there were people in the Palisades area that said when Forest Service tried to go in and clear areas that were a fire hazard, they wouldn't let them because it was a scar on the land. Well, guess what? Well, you got yourself a big scar now.
You're a bombed out hole.
Yeah.
Well, we have a lady running against Jared Huffman. I mean, in our crazy politics, I mean, there's no way we'll elect a Republican against Jared Huffman because no D's are, you know, moving over to the R column. But we do have an independent who is one of the last ranchers on Point Reyes, Nicolette Nyman. And so she was up here this past week. And, you know, you would think, oh, you live in Marin County. Like, that should be, you should be part of the favored crew. They got zero help from Jared Huffman, their congressman. So she's like, you know what? Maybe I ought to run against him because this is terrible.
Yeah.
And it's happening to all these people in the counties that they have stolen. So Modoc, Siskiyou, and Shasta, we have lots of problems with natural resources up here. And he absolutely, his track record should speak for itself. But it is interesting that still is a really heavy lift because you have a lot of people who are like, oh, well, an independent can't win. And it's like, well, you know, I think maybe the game has changed a little bit, depending on where you are.
Well, yeah, well, I know Elaine Kalati, who's running as an independent, no party preference, technically, for governor. And she's sharp. I love her, honestly. I mean, you know, if I'd advised her, I would have told her to just run as a Republican. But, you know, I mean, I think she was very principled to run as an independent. She thought that was the way to go, and for all the best intentions and reasons. But, like, she's been totally shut out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know? See, in a race like that.
I watch her a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, in a race like that, yeah. It's super polarized. In a race like ours up here, where it's heavy Democrat advantage, especially over on the coast, to pull somebody from over in that area who is actually an independent, isn't a hiding, you know, a Democrat hiding as an independent, always been one. And it's like, well, that's a different calculation. So we're looking to see what happens. You know, what do people do, and what do we have after June? And
well, I'm curious, you know, when you look at all these people, like, down in the Palisades that lost everything, and for reasons, again, that were self-inflicted, do you think, I've always said that when it hits them in the pocketbook, they'll wake up. Well, boy, it hit them in the pocketbook big time. Do you think they're going to rethink their political views, you know, being they're still living in a trailer or a hotel because they can't get permits to rebuild?
Yeah.
I mean, what's it going to take?
Yeah. I mean, if that doesn't do it, nothing will, honestly, I think. You know, it's just... It's just wild because you can, you know, what's happened to California is textbook. I mean, this is what banana Republicans have done to themselves. This is like Venezuela. I mean, you know, the middle class has been virtually eradicated in this state, and you know they're going to run out of other people's money, as Margaret Thatcher said soon.
Yep.
I mean, and that's the thing. It's like this fake balanced budget that Gavin Newsom is recently celebrating as some kind of success story. I mean, you're required. You don't have a choice but to balance the budget because we have an amendment that forces that anyway. But it's just creative accounting. And all these billionaires and their companies are fleeing. They're lucky that the stock market for AI and, you know, military defense has done well so that they got, you know, a bunch of billions in the bank to move some money around to propose this, you know, balanced budget. But, like, 6 months from now, that's not going to be the scenario, you know? People are leaving, and there's no incentive for them to stay. And it's like, you know, like, you can't, like, at some point, it's not the billionaires that are going to come after. It's going to be the millionaires,
yep.
You know? And then they're going to have to come for someone else after that. And I just think that all this stuff they talk about on the debate stage and everything else about the money they need to pay for, they can't cut, you know, the gas tax because we need these amazing roads that apparently these gas tax dollars are paying for, even though I can't drive without getting a flat tire. There's never a talk about the fraud. You know, if they would address the fraud, there's more money that's gone from fraud, more than enough to cover all this crap that they want.
Exactly. They wouldn't have to raise taxes if they could just manage and get rid of the fraud that goes on.
Was there any
in California?
Since you did watch all of the debates, was there any, I don't know, anything that surprised you? I mean, anybody who was actually not as bad as you thought, or not as crazy as you thought?
Well, when they added Villaraigosa to the stage for that one debate, the one before the most recent one, I mean, please do not mistake me for thinking he's, like, good or would be a good governor, but I was actually surprised at how well he handled himself. He came across as very, for the most part, reasonable compared to the rest of the people on there. But there, I can't believe what a loon. Actually, Tom Steyer, that guy is a nutcracker, nut giant.
Oh, yeah.
That guy's the biggest lunatic I've ever seen in my life. He is scary. And, you know, he's an authoritarian. Becerra has the authoritarian mentality, too. You know, Becerra was confronted by Hilton on this. You know, he's like, you know, I'll just declare an emergency, and then I will, like, tell all the insurance companies what they have to do. And it's like, bro,
have you
read the state constitution? Have you read it? Like, you actually can't do that. That's, like, not lawful. He's like, well, I'm going to try anyway. It's like, dude, okay.
That's how you're going to fix it.
Sad part is they couldn't redistrict either, but they did it. The Constitution clearly said they can't do it, but oh well, we need to do it anyway.
They took our district and cut it into three pieces.
There just seems like there's less and less law and order in this state.
And I think that's what makes people kind of tune it out in a way. Unfortunately,
I read an article the other day that over 100,000 people have moved to Texas. I forget over what last two years or something out of California alone, just Texas. I mean, they're moving out in droves.
going to be alone, yeah. Drew. We're going to do a lot of radio together in the future.
Yeah, there won't be anybody to listen to it, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we'll have a good time, won't we?
Yes, we will.
Yeah, okay, good.
Exactly.
As long as we got that squared away.
Exactly.
Well, we have very much enjoyed our time with you, ranging through all these topics. We will have to touch base soon, and honestly, when you have stuff, give us a holler. And come on, we like doing this in long form. It's a lot more fun than the usual stuff people get to listen to. So,
yes.
Drew Thomas Allen, author of Clinton Hoax, Obama Coup, The Declassified Story of the Trump-Russia Delusion. Definitely read it. And definitely listen to his podcast. We have that all linked up at the site. Thanks, Drew.
Thank you. Have a great Sunday.
You too.
All right,
you're listening
thanks,
to We the People Radio.
.us.
A good time, I'm having a ball.
Don't stop me now.
If you wanna have a good time,